Who doesn't like instant gratification? I know I do. It's one of the reasons I do stand-up and why I miss it so much. I need that rush of laughter. And if you are like me, you're looking for satisfaction and there's no need to wait. With Credit Karma Money, you could win cash reimbursement for your debit purchases. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Hi, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, for watching it on YouTube, however you put it in your ears and your eye holes. I certainly appreciate you. I just want to say thank you. You don't have to do that. You don't got to do nothing at all. There's so many things to watch. So many old things you could be watching. So many things you could be listening to. So thank you for taking the time out of the day to listen to this. If you support me, please continue to do so. Go to patreon.com/gettingbetterwithron. You can become a Patreon supporter of the podcast. There's exclusive episodes. There's thank you notes. There's wonderful little prizes that I'd be happy to send to you. Just go to patreon.com/gettingbetterwithron to find out more. Also, you can get a t-shirt at comediantees.com, or you can just come to one of my shows. I will be in Nashville for July 23rd and the 24th with Blair Saki at Zany's in Nashville. So come and see me. Other than that, is there anything else I need to promote? I don't think so. Let's get right into it. I hope you're feeling strong. Hope you're feeling brave. Hope you're feeling loved and grateful for that love. I hope you're happy, proud of yourself, enjoying this summer, being free and full of hope and happiness. And if not, I hope you're okay with that too. I hope you're being gentle with yourself. If you're still scared, if you're afraid of going out, if you're feeling apprehensive about jumping into things as I am, I find myself having to retreat and go back into my office, going back to my home. I'm only able to do about one or two things outside and I feel overwhelmed. And I'm okay with that right now. It's just like easing into a bathtub. You got to just do it little by little so you don't burn your balls. And I just try to have fun and enjoy my life and not take anything for granted. We got so many things in this world, so little time. Well, actually, it can seem like a lot of time if things are not going well. We all know how that could be. And for I myself, just being very specific, been missing my wife. She's been gone for a week. I've been locked in the house pretty much again. I'm not doing much, not having much work to do after being back out on the road. And it caused me to have a little bit of a mental freak out of feeling like I was at the beginning of the pandemic again, of not knowing what I had to do, what my schedule would be, where I'd have to go, and having to deal with that and having to deal with my own mental freak outs and just be like, okay, this isn't the same thing. Calm down about yourself. Don't oversmoke. Don't overeat. Just enjoy the relaxation that you have, because with everything, this too shall pass and you will be busy again before you know it. And so I'm just trying to enjoy this time, enjoy this summer, which seems to be pretty peaceful so far. Get back out, meet with friends, go out on lunches, and just talk with the people and hug the people who I wasn't able to see for the past year and a half, 2 years. And I also just feel very fortunate that my wife was able to go to Canada. She sent me videos of her hugging and holding her niece for the first time and hugging her grandma for the first time in 2 years. And that she thanked me for being able to be a good husband and provide with her the ability and the opportunity to go back home. And that does make me feel good as a husband and as a provider, as a man. And that's what I want to do. That's pretty much my focus right now. It's working on my son, trying to get him more independent. Today we went on to Subway and I was like, you know what? I'm going to just try to stay outside, let him go in and order the Subway, get his bacon sandwich with nothing, no veggies, nothing else on it, just bacon and bread, and have him pay with money out of his wallet and see how it goes. I'm like, I bet he could handle this. And then I watch him walk in the store and then immediately go towards the cookies and start talking to people. And I was like, okay, I got to get in there. So that made me laugh. And then also, you know, made me sad in a little bit where I'm like, oh, you know, my son's 18 years old and I still have to supervise him a little bit when it comes to like ordering food or just being more independent. But also just watching him as he did, put his wallet out, get his money out, pay, put his change away, tell the clerk, you know, thank you, have a great day. Be the most well-mannered customer in that whole place, to be honest with you. And I just like, oh, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some trial and error. But I'm feeling very positive about my son and his independence and just where we're going as a family. I'm feeling positive in my mind and my mental state and knowing my path and knowing my job, which is just to provide joy, to provide freedom, to provide happiness to people, and to just be a dream weaver and help others. And that's what I'm just going to continue to try to do in my life, hopefully for a long, long time. It's also the day before Hoss's birthday. So say happy birthday to Halsey. If you go online, give him a Twitter shout out, Instagram shout out. He's turning 30, which also makes himself super young. you're welcome. I'm 30. I'm 8 years older than you. I didn't know that. But that's fun. I like that. I think we'll probably end up talking. I mean, we'll talk about that, I think, with our guest today. But I love watching my friends get older. My Gabe just turned 38. I've been 38 for a little bit and just being like, oh, we're not the kids anymore. We're not the youngsters on the block anymore. We're grown as fucking men and women and we're out there trying our best to just live life the way we want to and be responsible for ourselves and then in some cases for our families. And I like that. I don't want to go back to being irresponsible and not caring about other people or just being selfish all the time or just being drunk at, you know, I never was. I'm allergic to alcohol, but you know what I'm talking about. Being drunk in 3 in the afternoon, just, you know, living that lifestyle. Like, well, who gives a fuck? I'll just care about me. And that's fun for a few years. I wouldn't trade it in for anything, but I like caring about my son. I like the fact that I want another kid. I want another baby because I'm not done being responsible and taking care of stuff. It makes me feel good. When my son graduated, it was a high like I never felt before. So I'd like to feel it again, possibly with another kid. And this time do it with a partner that actually loves and respects me and we have some money. Come on, let's do it. That's like playing a game on easy mode. Although, knock on wood, you never know what could happen. I'm not trying to belittle any parents of any type, but if I could do it with my special needs kids when I turned 20 years old and I didn't have any money, I feel like we could do it now. let's try it out, see what happens. Either way, I hope you're feeling wonderful. I hope you're feeling better than ever. I hope you know that you are a beautiful work in progress that is worthy of love and praise and joy. So go out, have fun today. Treat yourself right. Go buy yourself some flowers. Buy yourself a shaved ice, a Korean bingsu, or whatever you would like. Do it today. Yes, I'm talking to you. Be nice to yourself. You deserve it. And enjoy our guest today, Chris Gethard. Enjoy it. How are you? I know you're doing a lot of podcasts.
I'm good. I live in New Jersey now. I have a kid, so I feel good. It's exhausting, but it's very gratifying, and I feel good.
Okay, you want to jump right into it. Let's do it, Chris. Let's do it.
I'm just trying to be honest. I'm just trying to answer honestly. to a person who I respect greatly.
Thank you for saying that. That's how I start my podcast, is by with praise to you and telling you why I want you on the podcast. And Chris, you're one of my favorite comedians because of your vulnerability and your writing skills and the way that you you represent kind of art to me at its fullest. You don't seem to, you create things because you want to create them and you have a vision and it doesn't seem to like matter to you, like the outcome as much as like sticking to your vision. I guess that sounded like an insult at the end.
I watched you watching my reaction and putting yes, I don't care about success. Clearly, I'm not hung up on success. I just want to make stuff. And that is praise. And I thank you. And I've said this about you many times, is that we've met a handful of times now. And you're one of the people that sometimes people bring up and they'll go, what's Ron really like? And I go, as far as I can tell, genuine article is what he says he is who he claims to be. And that's high praise in the world of comedy, I would say.
Thank you. I say the same to you. That's a thing that was struck me as getting ready for this interview was going like, oh, this is a, because they were like, oh, you want to interview Chris Gethard? I was like, fuck yeah, of course. I love Chris. He's great. And then I sat back and go, oh, I've only probably talked to him four or five times for four or 5 minutes each. Like I've never spent
in that comedian
much time with
way.
Him. Yeah.
A comedian way of like, and I don't think we've ever met in New York or LA. I think it's always been at like weird festivals and gigs where you're running in 10 different directions.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's usually just me going like asking you a random wrestling thing and then we walk away.
Yes. We are two nice comedians who like wrestling, and therefore your name gets brought up to me by wrestlers. Anytime I meet a wrestler, they've already met you.
That's beautiful to hear. That's a beautiful compliment. I want to talk to you because you have your new special out. Tell people what it's called and where they can get it.
It's called Half My Life, and you can download it at all the places like Amazon and Vimeo and iTunes. And it's cheap. And I filmed it in 9 or 10 different venues. I self-funded the whole thing so I could do it my way. And I'm really proud of it.
I love it. I can't wait to watch it myself. But one thing when reading about it and reading some of the interviews that you've already done is like what made me excited to talk to you is it seems like we're almost in a very similar mind state of like where you're like, I'm not the new kid on the block anymore. Like I'm.
Oh, yeah. You have that too?
Yeah, that too? Very much so. Yeah, went to Austin to do some shows for my first weekend back out. And it was the first time where I was like seeing the local comics. And I was like, oh, they're not looking at me like I'm a peer or I'm like another coworker or even like I'm like a slightly older brother. They're looking at me like lunch. Like
Yeah. I mean, I've had comics. I always get excited when like younger, weirder people come up, you know, like when you see the other people who kind of are walking their own path. And I had one of them who I really like, who I was watching from afar, who I thought she was doing such cool stuff. And she is. And I won't name her because I don't want to embarrass her. But when we first met in person, after I was like very aware on the internet, being like, oh, she seems so cool, such weird stuff. Who told me that she used to watch my old public access TV show in middle school. And I was like, oh, that's cool. ? Like, it is cool. It's very cool to realize there's people doing cool stuff now who are like, oh, really? She actually told us she grew up in the New York area and used to email us and ask to come intern on our public access show all through high school. And I was like, that's awesome. But also, like, people who I really dig now were watching me in middle school. Then I think about what I was doing in middle school and I go, oh, I must feel so far away from them in a way that makes me, it kind of underlines who I am right now and what role I play. And all these questions about how life works, and you kind of have to get out of the way for the next people, but you also got to pay your own mortgage and all that stuff. It's like, it's very head spinning, and sometimes it can lead to some real self questioning. But then at the end of that, I take a deep breath. I go, oh, I think that means I've had a cool career and I'm going to have a pretty rad obituary. You know, like, I think at the very least I have that like if the young people who I respect go, I was watching your stuff when I was in diapers. Mm-hmm. I go, okay, that's what I was going. Ultimately, I can't stress out about that because that's what I was going for. It's what I was hoping would happen. So I can't stress too much about it, but I do.
No, it seems like I understand because especially, I was like poor, young, and this, you coming from more of a punk background, punk aesthetic. It's very much tied to youth and struggle and fighting against the authority. And then as you naturally age towards being considered the authority, that's hard to deal with.
Yeah. It's very astute. I didn't expect us to get so much pathos right out of the gate. But there's real truth to it, to realize like, especially like being like coming from that punk background and then walking the path I did specifically with my public access show, I realized, when we jumped to cable, there is no way around. We sold out. And I know what that means to the punk fans, because I was one of those punk kids who never wanted my favorite bands to sell out. But now I have a 2-year-old son, and, you know, I think we went to cable. I was 36 or 37 years old. And I go, okay, I tried to do it the right way. Like, I was in a position to hire writers' rooms. And I'd be like, if you look up who was in my writers' rooms, people would be like, oh, holy shit. Like, you went. I mean, like, I gave Joe Firestone her first job and Julio Torres one of his first jobs, like Will Miles, Anna Fabrega, Robbie Hoffman, all these people where I'm like, I'm so glad I got to fill this room with people who were not like me. And I tried to do it not for the sake of like being woke, but because I'm like, these are great writers and these are I already know my voice. And like, I remember we had our writers room up and running. That was when Colbert was getting slammed because it was all white dudes in his writers room. And I was like, why would you even do it? Like, why would you want? I already know what a white dude with glasses has to say, because that's me. I want to get other people. Point being, like, no matter how responsibly you sell out, and no matter how proud I am that like a lot of people had jobs, a lot of outsiders found their way in, got to give some people their rent for their creativity. Selling out is selling out, and you can't be cool forever, old man. And I've come to learn that. You know, come to learn that. Mm-hmm.
To me, there's a beauty in that. And to me, that's also like a surrendering of your ego of being like, I can't make this facade of like what I'm supposed to be completely about, because I will never be 100%. It's so fun that I get to talk to you about this, because you're probably one of the few people who will maybe consider this as deeply as I did. But I just saw that Marc Maron did like a cross promotion with Space Jam where he interviewed Bugs Bunny for the WTF podcast.
I did not hear that yet.
Yeah. And they animated him. They have this whole cartoon together of Bugs and Marc Maron. And I saw it and I go, this makes me so happy for so many reasons. This is just, like, I get it, because it's like, oh, it's a comedian and you're with Bugs Bunny. And that's amazing. No one can ever take that away from you, of like, you were with a cultural icon. And so by extension, they're saying some things about you. But secondly, this is Marc Maron, the guy who fucking was like, I am the good gatekeeper and I decide what is cool and not cool and who is a comedian and not a real comedian. And bitch, you fucking did a Space Jam thing with Bugs Bunny. Don't you ever say shit to nobody.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, I have a lot of love for Marc.
I love Marc. He's one of my favorite comedians and one of my favorite people.
It's so funny because as you were saying it, I was already having that conversation in my head of, right, he must have gotten offered that and been like, I can't fucking do that. But it's Bugs Bunny. How do I not? It's Bugs Bunny. Like, how do you not?
And then how much? What?
Exactly. I hope I hope he's getting some upgrades to the garage off of that one. That's amazing. I would probably do. I remember when we did my TV show. Oh, so they want, like, the networks all wanted corporate sponsorships. And here I am, this guy who came off of public access, like, shouting about punk rock all the time. They call me up. They go, we got a sponsorship. The network's super thrilled. I'm like, okay, that's cool. And they go, specifically, AT&T wants to sponsor your musical performances. And I'm like, of all the fucking things, because that's the one thing I have that's always going to be cool, is that I'm bringing in cool ass bands. Like, that's the one thing I have. But now they're going to be sponsored by AT&T. And what do I, like, how do I handle that? Like, the network is so thrilled. It's this tiny network. It's a good look for them that they're getting any of this stuff. And then now I get to, you know, hey, everybody, here comes They Might Be Giants, sponsored by AT&T. Like, I'm going to reunite the Ergs, and it's going to be on television, sponsored by AT&T. It's just, like, awful. And I did it and tried to just swallow it. But yeah, that was kind of my, there was a Bugs Bunny moment there where I could feel the old fans of my show being like, you fucking sell out. Mm-hmm. AT&T is sponsoring the punk bands.
For me, it happened pretty early. It was just straight up when I got asked to come in and audition for Trolls. And I was like, part of me was like, because I think I was 29. I might have been 29 years old. And I was like, no, I'm a stand-up. I need you people to respect how good I am as a stand-up. And I'm a pure stand-up. And why would I do that? Why would I be in a silly kids movie and people don't know my stand-up yet? That maybe after they know my stand-up, then I can do that. Mm-hmm. But then I was also like, well, who are your heroes in stand-up? They're Robin Williams. They're Chris Rock. They're people who've been in Madagascar, Aladdin, all these other things. And it was like, why wouldn't you want to do something like that that you've never done? And you can be a cartoon character. And like, it was I can't even imagine, like, now that I'm just a few years older, I was like, why was there any part of you that ever was like, right, no, I don't want to do that? Like, now it's like, especially through the pandemic, that the freaking Trolls franchise saved my life. It was the reason why I knew I could have a house, you know?
I can imagine. I lost my health insurance during the pandemic. First time in 15 years, I lost my SAG health insurance. I'm going, okay, gotta maybe start taking some weird offers when they come in, because can't screw around. I got a kid. I need the health insurance, but I'm with you. But you know what I think about too? And I've thought about this a lot, and like, not, and this is not an attempt at like cheap promo, but doing this special, cause I just hired one, my friend Kate, who is a segment producer on my show, who directs videos for a bunch of punk bands in New Jersey. I love, she and I come from like the same area and the same scene. Someone, even a production company, even offered to give me a bunch of money to make this thing if they would let them pick the director. I was like, I just kind of want to self-fund it, do it, my friend Kate. And one thing I realized in making it was like, the reality of life is I have a mortgage now. I have a son now. Like you said, Trolls is making sure you have a house over your head. But I think it's on people like us to go, well, okay, is it just that? Mm-hmm. Because that's when the people who liked us ever go, was it always just about getting you there? Or are you still going to be the fucking freaks? You know what I mean? Because that's, and I don't know if you would put that label yourself, but I'm like, are you still going to be the fucking like sad guy who was shouting about being sad back in the day, Gethard? Are you still going to be the guy who went on free TV after you had a sitcom that bombed out and you were like visibly pissed off? Was that all just so you could go and do guest spots on NBC, you got a guest spot on Space Force or Parks and Recreation or whatever. Like, no, that stuff's the means to an end. That stuff's the means to an end to keep going so I can figure out the next thing I have to say. And I wonder, I wouldn't put any labels on you, but I wonder, it's like, if you go, I got Trolls 2, peace, I'm no longer the guy who's like notorious for his positivity, who likes wrestling, who is like, I always felt like you were another person where I always respected you, because I felt like I see how much love you're getting, but I also see that the they can't quite sum you up in a sentence in a way I always loved, knowing you from afar, where I'm like, yeah, Ron's one of those guys. You can't break it down in a sentence or two. Like, Ron's bringing more to the table, and you disrupt the algorithm in that way. You know what I mean? So I think it's kind of for the people like me and you and many others who have come before us. It's sort of like, well, I'll happily take the money that comes and the security that comes with the other stuff. But do I flip any of it back towards supporting younger artists, supporting non-traditional venues, support? That's another, I just fired my agents during the pandemic, because another thing I had was like, okay, coming back to this, feeling these stresses, feeling older, feeling maybe a little less relevant, wondering if I still have anything left to say that's going to stand on the stuff I used to have to say. I go, well, here's the very least, here's what I can definitely do is any city where I can do an art space instead of a 2-drink minimum space, I'll make a little less money to do that. Any gig I can do that's not Ticketmaster, that's not, you know, AEG, whatever those companies are, like, sometimes you have to work with them. There's no option. But if I don't have to, I'll go with the other option, because I know that that's going to save people $9 fees. Like, I've told I signed with these new agents, and they were not mad, but found it very frustrating, because I was like, $20. And they were like, you can charge a lot more than $20. Like, we know the other acts who are at your level, they're charging more than $20. I go, yeah, but if somebody's paying $35 for a ticket and they bring a date and they want to have a drink or two, I don't only want to perform for people who have $100 in disposable income. Not everybody does right now. And I don't want my audience to just be rich people. I don't, you know, and I got more money than I used to, but I'm not going to pretend that I don't have, like, I own a house, you know, I do. But those are the things I think we can do, even as my jokes now trend more towards, like, here's what it's like being a dad, and here's how much I've gotten into lawn care since I moved to the suburbs. I'm like, I can at least try to do it in a way that reminds people, like, no, no, no. Like, at the very least, I know how I got here. I understand you all were a part of it. And I'm at the very least going to build the infrastructure in a way that doesn't sell out, because that we can control. So I don't know. For me, at least, that's given me some strength of, like, I might be older and lamer, but at the very least, I can, like, box things out in a way where I go, I'm going to at least do it in a way that feels right. Like, I just headlined my first gig on my tour on Saturday. I'm doing 20 cities. And the first one was in a backyard in Binghamton, New York. I did a barbecue in Binghamton, New York. And I'm like, I don't have to be doing a backyard in Binghamton at this point in my career, but I really like to. And I think it says some things that I want to, like, send up a signal flare and be like, nope, this is still important to me. So I try to do that. I don't know. Now I'm just on a fucking high horse. Sorry for the cursing.
No, I love it. It gives me a lot to think about, that I just been thinking about my own career. So it's nice to talk to someone who seems like they're going on a similar journey. It seems like you've been a little bit more, I'd say, mindful. I mean, I definitely keep my ticket prices low, and I try to, that's something I do on purpose as well. But as far as avoiding fees or certain things, I think something maybe I could be a little bit more mindful of.
They don't always tell us.
They don't.
So I sometimes find out that somebody thought they were buying a $20 ticket and they bought a $40 ticket. I get mad. Just so people know, I get mad when I find out that happened to you.
Yeah. Well, I had a venue where they wanted to add a DJ and up the price. And I was like, why would we? First of all, throwing a DJ on me is two different, that's two different styles. So it's going to be weird if everybody's here for a hip hop dance show, and then I come out and start just telling you about my life. And then that's not an extra $10 on the ticket to me. Like, let's just keep it affordable and do it that way. But to kind of pull back a little bit, here's something that I always, I think maybe where we are similar, and it's something I learned in comedy that would bother me, and I won't mention any names, but it's the same thing where I was like, I knew a lot of people and they were freaks and weirdos and they're yelling at authority and they're speaking truth to power. And then they get a little role on a show, or they get a this or that. And then it's almost as if they're like, okay, wait, now I have to kind of back off and be a little bit more corporate. And I can't say, like, I got into issue because, like, a friend of mine was on an NBC show, and I was like, that show looks like it sucks. And I was like, They're like, why would you say that? Because it looks like it sucks. Like, that's, I mean, maybe I shouldn't have been so, but I thought we were friendly enough that I could be like, oh, that looks like a crappy show. But I'm not, just because I'm on a show doesn't mean I've changed the way I am. Like, if anything, I try to become more myself, more what I'm about. I just find sometimes that you go two ways, where either like I find all my friends who were like really anti-authority and real like fun comedy freaks, and then they get a little taste and they're like, okay, I better do whatever it is that got me here and better keep doing that. Where I kind of have just been like, oh, thank you for, you don't know how low my standards are, and you giving me this little bit of money just means that now I'm going to go do what I want for months. Like, because I don't need a nice car. I don't need this or that. I just need to continue to pay my mortgage and continue to buy video games, continue to make my wife happy, and I'll be fine. So if you give me just a little bit, then it allows me to get a lot weirder and have more like you and reinvest in my friends. And as even now, like I've been doing a show, I take three openers with me and I pay for all stuff. And it's not like I'm making a bunch of money. It's just like, this is the show I want to make.
Yeah. That's a lot though. That's a commitment. That's big. I wonder if you're like me too, where it's like, cause I talk to you right now and I'm going like, fuck yeah, this is what I need to hear. I'm shocked to hear that you and I have been having such similar thoughts. And then I'm sitting there and you're like, yeah, I do it my way. You gave me the money. Thank you. Now I can go keep doing it my way. Three openers. And then I'm talking my whole spiel. But do you find too, is it like, for me, I'm like, the moments when I set these things up or commit to them or do them, I have this feeling of clarity where I'm like, yes, this is where it always came from in my gut. And simultaneous to that, I go, this is also why I have not gotten to a point of true stability that I can rest easy, because I can't get out of my own way. Like, there's a part of me that knows maybe I should have moved to LA. Maybe I should have just kept applying to write for all the shows everybody writes for and see if that could work out. Maybe I should, you know, I passed on pilot season for years to do public access TV, and my agents were like, fuck you, dude. Like, after a certain point, they just gave up so hard. It took me forever to realize. I go, all of those things are the things I'm most proud of. They are also the reason why there are many, many times that people feel no qualms. Like, someone will like introduce me to a friend and be like, oh yeah, this is my, this guy I know, like he's on TV. And they'll look right at me and feel no qualms going like, I don't know who you are. Like, people feel total comfort saying that to me, where I go, yeah. And that's also because I have these ideals and this sense that I should have ethics. Like, it's the thing I'm most proud of. I'm also like, oh, is this also why I will never feel a safety net at all? Ever. Never. Not for one day.
Well, it still could happen. First of all, you could find it.
Who knows?
Yes, true. Exactly. Who knows? But I've always... it's like, it reminds me of like this thing where I saw like the Lizzo, the singer, and she was getting into this argument online with people, where she was like, people aren't respecting my rapping skills. I'm a good rapper. I've been a rapper for years. I know how to rap. You know, I want people to refer to me as a rapper. And I was like, no, I get that. I know what that's like. That's the same thing as I was before. Like, I'm a comedian. I want to be a comedian. Why would I be a thing? But when you step back and you're not in it, you go, why would you go backwards? You're a pop star. Who cares if they're calling you a rapper? You're a fucking celebrity star, pop star Lizzo, you know? So in some ways, there's just this kind of thing of like, well, we want to self-define it. But for you, like, would you have been happy in those writers' rooms? Would you have been happy?
Oh, I would have almost definitely killed myself. I would have at some point killed. I would have gotten so depressed. And I'm not saying that even to be hyperbolic. Like, I would have been, I was a guest writer at SNL in 2007, years before anybody heard my name, when I was just like a New York guy coming up, and they knew me through UCB. And I always think back to that. I wrote there for 2 weeks. And then I didn't get the job. And for years, I kept applying, and it crushed me. And I felt like I squandered my only chance. And then I think back, I go, man, if somebody hired me to write for SNL when I was 27, I would be dead. I would be dead right now. I would have drank myself to death, or I would have started doing drugs. I wouldn't have been, I would be dead. I would be dead. So it's like everything that happened, happened perfectly. I will never stop questioning every choice I've ever made. Maybe that's the Irish Catholic.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know? Yeah, I can see it. I mean, there's the lessons that I've had to learn just from doing it. Like, you know, I took this show on CBS because I was like, oh, I've done a guest role on every network but CBS. So on every, like, you know, the five networks, whatever. And so I was like, yeah, I'll go. Then I can say I've done every network. And I spent 2 months working on this show where I never got to improvise. I never got to add anything. Nobody ever wanted to play. Everybody kept telling me I was brilliant. I spent most of my time platinuming Spider-Man on the PS4 in my dressing room. And people would be like, you got the best job in the world. And I'd come home and I'd be so depressed. And I'd talk to my girlfriend, who's now my wife. And I'd just be like, I don't, like, this is one of the first times where, like, I leave every day and I don't know if I'm funny or not. Like, I'm not sure if I'm funny. I'm not sure if I'm doing a good job. Like I literally, I know when I bomb. I've known when I've killed it. This is the first time where I'm like, I can't tell what's happening. And it makes me feel so bad. It was literally like, and it sounds like, you know, you're so dramatic. Like, you're sitting around making thousands of dollars to just hang out. But I was like, I never want to go through this again. It doesn't matter the money. It doesn't matter the thing. If I can't feel like I'm actively helping, if I'm not feeling like I'm being a positive in this situation, then it doesn't work for me no matter how much money it is.
I can't tell you how much I needed to talk to you tonight. I can't even tell you how much I needed to hear this. Because I have days where I feel like I know exactly what the game plan is. Let's go. I have days with self-doubt, but just hearing that where I'm like, every once in a while I do. Cause like you said, even some of the people with the best intentions and with like the focus for the most weight, once they get the money, sometimes that's it. So to hear that you're also like, not, you know, I got to that place and it wasn't worth it. And I love, by the way, that it was just arbitrarily to just not have a CBS notch on the belt. That's also so funny to me. That is very, very funny. Just be like, well, I haven't had CBS, a network that I'm sure it's not like you're glued to the tube watching CBS every night. It's just to say you did it. Yeah, that, I'm glad that there's people like you out there who see it like that. It actually gives me a lot of hope, to be honest.
No, thank you.
It's very dramatic. Very dramatic, I know, but it's true. Just to go like, yeah, no, there isn't. Because I don't know. I wonder how you would feel about this too. And I don't know enough about the scene where you are. Mm-hmm. And I think you came up in Portland, right? Mm-hmm. If I remember right. I know a little bit about the scene there, but not much. But a part of it for me too is, I've been around forever, but I've never really felt like one of the cool kids. I feel like I watched people figure out where I go, oh, you went and got one of those jobs and now you're locked in for life and you got that forever and you're part of this little clique and this club. And then I feel like I'm out here doing things that are cool and I feel good about them and some of them go well and some of them don't. But I get the sense there's all these other people out there getting like brunch together because they've all hit a level and they figure it out and they hang out. And they all text each, they're on text chains together. And I'm like, I'm just over here.
I think you're right.
I'm like purely doing my own thing 21 years in. And I'm like, oh, I remember once realizing, I once organized a roast of another comedian who I didn't even know that well. I just really liked him. He was coming up in New York. He's great. His name's Dan Licata. He just, he wrote on SNL. I don't know if he still does, but he got hired there. It was awesome. And he does a lot of writing for Joe Perez, Adult Swim mm-hmm. show. And it was weird because he started a few years after me and people were like, why are you organizing a roast of this guy that you like know, but don't even, like you're supposed to roast your best friends. And then one of the jokes said about me, I forget if it was him who said it was like, Gethard, if you want to hang out with us, you can also just text us, man. And that one really rang true. I was like, oh, I don't hang out with comedians, and I would love to. And I just find out they all hang out with each other. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess I'll just be out here.
Yeah, I know.
Doing my weird shit.
I don't have any advice on that because I think I'm in a similar boat. To me, it is just a microcosm of just my whole life, of just what I've always been from high school and previous to high school, where I'm a floater. Like, I've always been accepted in a lot of groups, but not a part of the group, you know, where they're like, yeah, we know Ron, we like Ron, but do they really like get dinner or hang out with me? No, like, there's nothing like that. I have like four or five friends, like in general, in actual life, my wife and my son probably being two of them. It's just different. No, I remember when I found out, I think I was in Montreal and I found out there was like this whole black comedian text thread. And I was like, oh.
How do you find out about it?
It was W. Kamau Bell. He had found out about it and he was mad that he wasn't in it. So he was telling me about it. And I was like, well, I'm not in it.
That's amazing.
There's two things that I enjoy in my life. That is keeping track of my karma in my life and keeping track of my credit for my money and my financials. So we want to thank Credit Karma for sponsoring the podcast. And Credit Karma has always been there to help you to make better financial decisions. And now they want to help you even more with Credit Karma Money Spend Account. You can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily instant karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your instant karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away over $3 million in instant karma to over 50,000 Credit Karma members and counting. So you can just open your FDIC insured spend account for free, no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. Now, if you act quickly and make a purchase between July 1st and the 23rd, you'll be automatically entered to win $1 million. At Credit Karma Money, progress starts here. Just go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That is creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. To tell you the truth, I've always felt that stand-up is like truly like that lone wolf of like, it's me in the audience and me in that brick wall. So I don't get anything out of like hanging out and being cool. I've just never hung out. It was always and it might have been because when I started comedy, my son was already 2 years old. And so like anytime like the local open micers, they would even be like, let's go do karaoke. We're doing a softball league. And I'd just be like, I need to be hitting mics or be at home with my son. I can't be fucking around. This isn't a team sport. I'm not going to all come up with you. We're not going to all be on headlining together. So I probably, what's the point of me doing softball with you? There has been like now where I'm like, you know, after the pandemic and just being more grateful for some of these minds where I'm like, I've reached out to people like Moses Storm or people who I just like, and just like, I'd like to get lunch with you just because I like your mind and I love anytime I'm around you.
I love that you brought Moses up. To my knowledge, I've never met Moses, but I've, as someone who really, really loves and appreciates Conan, come to learn of Moses because Moses like works under Conan. Conan champions him. I really like what that guy does. I don't think we've ever even met, but I like him. I get the sense he's one of the good ones.
Yeah, no, he really is. He really is. I mean, from everything, from his background to just the way he treats people and just the way that he thinks about comedy and he thinks about the way the business treats people. He is one of the good ones. I love Moses. He's a great guy.
I like him. Like him from afar. I left a comment on one of his Instagram videos once because I thought it was really funny and I felt very cheesy doing it, but I was like, this is so funny. This is so good. But yeah, I wish I could reach my shrink just because I was struggling because I realized, man, like the pandemic really does shine a spotlight on it where I'm like, oh, there's people in my life I thought I was close to where I've now come to realize if I don't text them, I will never hear from them again. And that takes a lot to reconcile, but I ultimately realized, and that's fine, I guess. Like, that's what happens. Life goes through phases. You're close with people at times. And my shrink was like, you know, you have, and I've been with her for 14 years. So she, like, she knows everything backward and forward. And she's like, when you went for comedy, you really went for it and cut everything else off. And she's like, so most of your friends are just your comedy friends. But she was like, you also have to realize, and I thought she was quoting someone else, but I thought this was so brilliant. And it's really changed my perspective where she's like, you can't get mad at people. Because a part of me is also like, man, when I had a TV show, everybody wanted to be my friend because I was able to give people jobs. And she's like, maybe either you're being really cynical or maybe some of it's true. Who knows? She's like, at the end of the day, you can't get mad about it though. She goes, every single relationship on earth, except that of a mother and child, is transactional in some way. Mm-hmm. And that blew my mind.
I learned that from Persona 5.
Wait, what's Persona 5?
It's a video game in which you become, it's an RPG and you're in high school and you become friends with people. And the stronger you strengthen your bonds of friendship, the more that then you can use them to defeat enemies and they give you more power. So then I was like, oh, that's what they're talking about. That is the transactional power of friendship where you're like, oh, the deeper we are, the more I can use you for
for purposes that get me things. And she said, she was like, sometimes you give friendship and the transaction is you get friendship. But she's like, not usually in real life. Like, usually there's more to it than that. And yeah, maybe people aren't getting stuff out of you anymore and you feel like they were never friends. But guess what? It's kind of what friendships are. It's people getting stuff out of each other. And go figure out who the real ones are and hang on to them. I was like, oh, that was one of those therapy sessions where I was like, this is great and it hurts. And I can't believe I paid you money to have my brain rattled around in my head this much, but thank God I do it. It's good. What's your favorite video game of all time? Have you answered that question a million times?
No, it's Super Mario 3. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite game of all time, but it's changing. Portal 2 really has shot up there now that I'm on Twitch. I know that you've been doing things with the Planet Scum. I've seen their Twitch channel before. Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about that? What is that?
That is basically, in New York, I was running, the public access network asked me to come back after my TV show got canceled. And I said, I don't want to host another public access show, but what I'd love to do is try to build some sort of like regular outlet for other comedians. So a lot of the great alt comedians in New York, I was having them come in and host nights on this public access TV show. So I could go to the comedians and be like, I can pay you a little money and you can get like a 3-camera studio with a staff and you can do stuff live and take phone calls, like all this stuff. I can just get that for you, put a little bit of money in your pocket and like shoot a show with a real crew. It was really fun. And then the pandemic killed that, obviously. So one of the guys who was working on that, who was doing all the streaming side of it, making sure that it wasn't just seen in New York, he built out a Twitch platform in the really early days of the pandemic. So a lot of great comedy stuff takes place on Planet Scum. We had the George Lucas talk show and Robbie Hoffman and Mary Houlihan and Martin Urbano. A lot of great people. Christy Cello does a show with me on there and Will Hines. Like really, really great people. In the same way you shouted out Moses too. All those people I named are well worth your attention. I feel like the LA comedy scene is not fully aware of Martin Urbano yet. And I feel like everyone out there would be a little obsessed with him. He's one to watch.
Okay.
He's one to watch. Yeah.
I'm not familiar. So yeah.
You'd love him.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about being married and having a baby, having a 2-year-old kid and spending that year in the pandemic with your child. And my son is now 18. He's just graduated high school. I am in negotiations with my wife to try to get her pregnant.
Oh, wow. You're going for it.
I feel like I want to. I wasn't fully on board before, but now I'm like, my son's 18. I'm only 38. I got so much more time. What am I going to do? Just hang out with him while he plays video games all day?
Wow.
Like, we got to have another kid or something. We got to do something. Because I think, again, a part of the whole punk thing and everything is, like, I was going to a few sets for a while. And it was actually when I was on that CBS show, and I would see it. And I even made the joke at that time where I was like, man, all these 20-year-old comedians are talking about drugs I never heard before. And the only thing I can talk about is that I'm not sure if Matt LeBlanc thinks I'm funny or not.
Oh, that's too good. That's too good. I'm sure he thought you were hilarious, by the way.
I'm still not sure. But I just be like, I have to just embrace. I think the worst thing you can do is like try to live in the stunted adolescence and just continue to be like, I'm still the same guy I was when I was 20, when I'm 38. That doesn't make much sense to me. So I'm trying to embrace it. How do you feel like with your child, with the marriage, with the house ownership? How have you been handling that?
It ties into everything we've been talking about, where I go, man, like, what a beautiful thing. I mean, my son is just like a joy, just a revelation.
He's beautiful. I just saw pictures of him. He's such a cutie.
Thanks. He's really something special, and he's funny. And you know, from having raised a kid, like, he's only two, but like, he can already do bits, you know, like, he's already figured out like how to like how repetition can be funny, or how to like build a little. My favorite game he plays is Yoda Has No Feet. He has a Yoda doll, and he'll pick it up and walk it over to me. And I know my job. I'll go like, that's Yoda, right? And he'll be like, yeah. And I'll be like, now I'm seeing right there that Yoda has feet. And he'll go, Yoda has no feet. And I don't know how it started, but then I'll go, no, I'm looking at his feet. He has feet. And he'll go, Yoda has no feet. And it ends in a game where my wife will often tell us to stop, because it will just end with me going, Yoda has feet, and him like grabbing me by the hair going, Yoda has no feet. The bit, he's doing a bit, you know? So it's a joy. The silver lining of the whole pandemic is I was home every night. I had dinner with my wife and my son every night for over a year. That just does not happen when you're a comedian. It just, you're not home at dinner time very often. So I feel like I know him better. I feel like he and I have a friendship that's great. Creatively, it ties into all the fear, right? Of like I'm growing up and my audience is used to me being like the weirdo or the guy who did things his own way, or the troublemaker or the depression guy. And now I just try to write honestly, and I sit here and I go, well, now I have a lot of jokes about, you know, lawn care. Legitimately, I love lawn care. I started working on my lawn. I moved to this house. I didn't know what I was doing. I messed it all up. It's been really fun to figure out the science behind fixing it and how grass works and soil temperatures and when different weeds are going to grow. Like, I find it interesting, and I feel like a 41-year-old guy talking about it on stage. And, you know, other jokes about, oh man, the way they tell me to raise my kids sure is different than the way my parents were told to raise me. And I sit here, I go, I hear myself saying it. I go, that feels cheeseball. But you know what? I go, oh, just like you were saying, like, what am I going to do? Like, am I going to, the two options here are either I'm going to lie and write material that's not true, or I'm going to start self-sabotaging and fucking up my great life on purpose so I have stuff that's more interesting to talk about. Or what I'm starting to really wrap my head around is, like, maybe the real skill is to embrace it fully and figure out probably some of that audience that was with me 10, 11 years ago, they're 10 or 11 years older as well. And even if they're a few, like, my audience always historically been a few years younger than me, so they'll catch up to it, you know? Mm-hmm. Someday they're going to buy a house and they're going to go, oh shit, it is kind of stressful. Oh, you do kind of find fun in the home improvement project. They're going to have kids someday too. And they're going to go, oh, right. It does. does make you reconsider everything from the ground up. So try not to be self-conscious. And I've kind of committed in my head, I want to put out an album someday that's called something along the lines of like, I used to be cool. Now I'm a suburban dad. Sometimes that puts me in my head, but ultimately I'm okay with it. I feel like I'm trying to remember that phrase because I feel like that's exactly where I'm at creatively. It's really tough and sad, isn't it, to go, my life is more amazing. I'm raising my son in a nicer neighborhood than I was raised in. Mm-hmm. He's going to go to a better school than I went to. I have a wife I would never have dreamed of when I was like the kid who never, you know, hit puberty 4 years after everybody else. And I was really into wrestling. Like, I got this life. It's kind of sad to sit there and go, but creatively, is this life ruining my creative voice? You go, oh, and that's the thing that I love my dad. And if my dad ever hears this, he knows that I have great respect for him. But I've kind of realized too, like, I think my dad and a lot of people from his generation, they forgot that like you fight really hard to get to something. And I've gotten to it. And I got to enjoy that as much as I wonder where it's going to lead me. No. I don't want to not enjoy this just because my jokes aren't as edgy anymore, you know?
Yeah, to me, like, and I love my jokes now. I think I'm a better joke writer now than I was when I was in my 20s. But what I do find more concrete than that, more solid than any of that, was when my life was in order, when I didn't know, when I was sleeping on a mattress, when I was literally would wake up and be like, okay, I have 70 cents and I have my son. How am I going to get enough things to get him a Totino's pizza so that he isn't starving today? Like, that was how I'd wake up almost every day in my 20s for a while. And now none of that is a concern. I know I'm going to feed my son. Like you said, my wife is amazing and gorgeous. My house is beautiful. And then I can like, so now it's like, if I have a good set, and I come back home and I go, fuck, look at my beautiful fucking house that I got from telling fucking jokes.
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't go well, I still go home and I go, look at this beautiful fucking house I got from telling jokes. So if anything, it just made me feel more solid in myself and my abilities and made me weird. Like, oh, like now I'm doing some very deep Rugrats referential jokes where I'm just like, look, you already gave me the money, so you're going to have to take these jokes.
I love it. I love it. I really love it. I wonder too, like, have you had this experience where I've hit an age and I've hit a level, I feel like I've been doing it a long time, but I'm not untouchable. Mm-hmm. Like, I still rent my own car and drive from gig to gig. You know, I land in the airport in one city. I don't have a tour bus. Mm-hmm. I don't have a private jet. Some of these comedians out here with private jets, people who I knew when we all started are on private jets. And I'm like, holy shit, good for you. But I will say there's been some harder edged comedians who have kind of publicly started saying some things about me. It's happened like 3 times during the pandemic too, when I didn't even have, you know, I would not have really thought about it at all if I could just go up on stage and be like, no, I'm just going to like connect with this audience hard and they're going to have a magical night. Like, when I'm at my best, I think audiences walk away going like, I don't even know what just happened, but that was beautiful. Like, at my best, when things are going awry and I'm bringing people up on stage and the material is going away just for other stuff, like, that's me at my best. I didn't even have that. So I sit here and I think about it. And like, for a long time, I would get like mad or sad of like, oh, I'm like a pot shot. I'm like the guy you make fun of for being emo or for being like, quote unquote, not real comedy. I sit there, I go, man, I've lived off of it for years. So that's the definition of a real comedian, right? It's like, are you paying your rent? Then you're a real comedian. Is it on your tax returns? You're a real comedian. But then I sit there, I go, you know what? Just the past handful of days, I've actually been realizing, like you said too, I'm like, I think my joke writing is actually getting better. Maybe because I do just have more traditional things to write about right now. And I'm just going, I almost want to be like, keep bringing my name up, because you're just putting me in a position where you're making me mad And when I get mad, all I know how to do is just get better. Mm-hmm. And you're going to put me in a position where I'm going to have to go just become one of the best comedians, like one of the best comedians you can imagine, just so that you have to shut up.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that's going, man, it's putting me in my head to become like the older guy who people have taken some pot shots at, to be like, that's what I'm the name you bring up when you bring like, oh, that's like somebody who gets sad instead of making jokes. And then we're all supposed to think it's deep. I go, okay, keep making fun of me then. I guess I'll just go learn how to write better jokes and just be better at comedy than you are, so that you can never question my place or my standing in this ever again.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I do know how that feels. I absolutely know how that feels. I mean, mine's different. Mine's usually people, what do I get? That like, oh, you know, you're phony and that's not your real voice. And that's not what you really, you're not really this sweet or nice or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, I love it when people believe in me. That's probably when I'm at my, that's probably when I'm at my best, is when people believe in me and I feel free and I feel, pushed up. That's probably when I'm at my best on stage, but I'm at my second best on stage when you don't believe in me. And when you tell it, when I get a little resistance and I have to go, okay, there's this song I really love that I've been listening to get me back into writing and get back in my stage presence from J. Cole called Applying Pressure. And there's just this thing, this bit at the end. And it's just, it might be a comedian. It might be a rapper. I'm not sure who it is. It's just a guy talking for a while. And he goes like, sometimes these motherfuckers will act like they don't, that you ain't doing it like how you be doing it. So sometimes you just need to get in their face and do it how you be doing it, so you can show them motherfuckers that you know how you be doing it, and that when you do it, they can't do it like you do it, because bitch, there's a difference. And I
wow. Wiser words have never been spoken.
And I was just like, I feel this so hard.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that makes me feel good.
Yeah, no, this whole conversation has made me feel good. I thought it would when I was reading a bit about your special and about how you were feeling lately, because I was like, oh, thank you, somebody to talk to about this. It'd be great.
Well, because we also, even from different coasts, does it, I wonder, I get the sense that maybe like we were part of a similar wave, right? Mm-hmm. Timing wise.
Yeah.
And I wonder if part of it is just that whole wave is growing up and there's a younger wave. And now we have to figure out, like, I see some of the people who are coming up right now. Like my friend, she was in Chicago. She was in New York for a minute. Now she's in LA. Megan Stalter, who's on that show, Hacks. Megan, I saw Megan come to New York and getting on stage. My jaw was dropping. I was like, this is the funniest person I've seen in years. And it's automatic. And I sit there, I go, oh, and we're cut. Like, I see that we're cut from the same cloth. I see that we are. And then I realize, oh no, I think I'm the old guard. I don't think we're pals. I think I'm the old guard. And I think that, and she's someone who mentioned to me that her and her friends like knew my public access show. And I think one of her friends in particular used to really like, really, really like it and watch it all the time. And they all knew about it and watched it. And I'm like, that's amazing. And also, we're not doing mics together, and we didn't pay our dues at the same time. And I have to remember, maybe I'm not the only one. I bet there's a whole bunch of people from our generation who are feeling this exact thing right now.
I think it is. I think it's just about, I mean, again, as my son has gotten older and he thinks, I've been looking at like, oh, it's graduating. We're just moving on from high school, college, or whatever you want to put it. It's just moving on. And that means there's a new class coming up. But it also, like, we do all this, and I swear, I mean, I don't know how many older comedians listen to my podcast, but there's comedians in their 50s and 60s who are like, shut the fuck up. You guys are young as shit. What are you even talking
about? I think a lot about some of the people I admired who probably had all sorts of weird feelings about me. Not that I feel like that made it sound like I have weird feelings about Meg Stalter, who I did not. She's a gem. But where I'm like, oh, some of the guys I now know who were established when I was coming up, and I was like this young kid in New York who people started going, oh, that kid from Jersey, he's actually pretty good. Keep an eye on him. I go, oh, back in 2007, 2008, I was probably the guy that a lot of guys were going, fuck, man, I don't get press anymore. They do. And now I see those people. I'm like, oh, okay, okay. Mm-hmm. I got it. Also, because
I know we were talking about it back a little while ago, but I'm going to jump back before we wrap this up and just go, like, I think it also is a lot to do with the Emmy season. Like, I think I had to shut down my Twitter and Instagram for a while because that's the same thing you're talking about. It's like, where I think just the older part of me goes like, oh, I would love to be nominated. That'd be fun. And it seems cool when all my friends are like, I'm working on this show. And it, but then like the me and my 17, like, that show still sucks though. Like, I mean, you don't like, just because you're Emmy nominated doesn't mean it's a good, we know it doesn't mean it's necessarily a good show. But then that part of me is like, man, I wish I was on one of those things that was where I see all my friends getting in, go to Emmy parties and things like that.
Have
and
you
like,
been nominated ever?
I've been under consideration.
But I was never even under consideration. When my HBO special was the thing, because it was on HBO and it was about depression. And I said, okay, if anything I ever do is going to get consideration, it'll be this. And they didn't even push it at all. And I was like, okay. And that was a good moment for me to realize, like, I kind of giggled going like, right, I am not invited. I never get invited to the club fully. Don't forget that. Take a deep breath. There's freedom in knowing that. Right. You don't get to go to the fancy parties. You just make the thing. I read it.
But the whole thing is, if I did, I would hate it. That's the whole thing.
Oh, I'd feel uncomfortable. I'd want to crawl out of my skin. My wife would enjoy it and kind of try to find ways to make me enjoy it. I'd be anxious. I'd feel like there was a lot of fakeness around me. I'd feel disappointed seeing people who I love buying into the fakeness, all of it.
Yeah.
I still would like an invite.
Yeah, same. Because I think we're doing good stuff. Oh, all right. Well, I could talk to you for probably another hour or two, but I don't want to keep you from whatever. Your family will probably need you. So let's do the plugs. Where can people find your special again? Is there anything else you want to plug? And then I'll ask you our final question.
Oh, well, chrisgeth.com. That's where all my tour dates are. I'm doing 20 cities between now and the end of 2021. And the special's on Amazon and iTunes and Vimeo, and Planet Scum has good stuff. I have a new podcast called New Jersey is the World that's all about my love of my home state where I just moved back to. It's stupid. It's fun. So those are the things. Those are the things.
I love it. Well, I hope people follow you and watch your specials in particular. And I'm going to, when will I watch it? I'm going to say a word that will be real and not a lie. I'll watch it Saturday. That's what I'm going
to
watch it.
Fair. And you don't have to watch it all at once.
I won't.
I understand.
You know, if I do though, oh my God, it means it's going to be so good if I watched it all the way in one sitting.
I don't think you will. It's pretty good. I'm proud of it. It's rough around the edges. I paid for it myself.
That's what I'm interested in though. I want to see the rough around the edges. That's
I hope you like it. I really genuinely hope you like it.
No, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to leave myself a note so that I'm not a liar. last question. Last thing I want to ask is just for a piece of advice, a pearl of wisdom, a little nugget of joy, maybe given to you by your wife, maybe passed down to you, maybe something your therapist has helped you with, maybe something your son has given you. I don't care where it's from, as long as this helps our getting better community to get better.
I'll say this. Because I have found that oftentimes people will look at me. I have found that a lot of times people look at the way I kind of found a back door to having a career. And sometimes people who are frustrated and want to try something in their life, maybe it's creative or they want to quit their day job. Probably the best advice I ever got in that sense was my shrink told me many, many, many years ago. Because I was at UCB where everyone was getting famous and rich. And then it was like the people who started before me did, then my friends, then my students. And I was becoming like the guy that everybody was like, I guess not everybody does. And that was like a decade in. So it was a very real feeling. I remember my shrink said to me, you have to give yourself no other option. And it was so simple, but I said, what do you mean? And she was like, well, you know, you're teaching improv classes, or you're like writing magazine articles sometimes, and you're cobbling together all these different things, but what do you want to be doing? And I was like, comedy exclusively. She was like, you need to quit everything else. Anything that's paying you money that's not comedy, you need to quit and give yourself no other option. And I said to her face, I said, I think that's really bad advice. She said, why? I said, I pay my rent with those things. So that's how I'm able to live, to, you know, chase the dream. And she goes, at some point, you got to either eat off of it or not. And she said, the thing that's killing you right now, that's like stressing you out so bad, is that you don't know. But she goes, I guarantee you, if you go out there and you give yourself no other option and you refuse to survive on anything except it, and you can't make it work, it'll suck, but you'll be fine. But this floating in the middle, that's killing you. She's like, I'm watching that kill you. So I did what she said, and I stopped accepting money for anything that wasn't like on target with the goals for a while. And I had just about struck out. I had given I set aside just like a couple thousand dollars in a savings account in case I needed to like pay rent last minute and didn't have it. And I had the luxury, very lucky to be able to say that I had that luxury to even do that. Many people don't. But the same month that I dipped into that money for the first time, which I had always told myself, if I dip into this, that means it's done. And I got to think hard about other jobs. That was the same month that I booked my first ever role in a movie, which then, ever since then, I haven't looked back. So it was like, at a certain point, if you really think you can do it, you kind of just got to go do it. Mm-hmm. And that's how you're going to find out if you can do it. And if you can't do it, you'll be fine. But don't float in the middle, because that's how you wind up ripping your hair out of your head.
Because, bitch, there's a difference. If you can't.
It's true. There's truth to it, though, right?
It is so true. Absolutely. Because you can't sit around and not to put in a demeaning way, but you can be a hobbyist of comedy. You can sit around and hang out and do it on the fringes and do it on the weekend. And for a lot of time, that's when my mom and I would argue about, because I had my son already. And so then she was just like, go. We laughed about this, not book, a month ago, where she was like, I'm so proud of you. She was like, but I'd be proud of you because you're a good person. I'd be proud of you if you were a manager at a grocery store and you were just a good person. And I was like, that's actually what you wanted me to be. That's what if you don't remember, we had a conversation when I was 27 years old where you were like, it doesn't seem like this is working for you. Maybe just do it on the weekend and go work at a grocery store during the week. And I just had to be like, this is all I'm doing. This is what I'm focusing on. This is like same thing. There is no backup plan. And what I found for myself, and I think what a lot of freelance people find when they separate from themselves from the teat of that other job, is that the stress is the same. You still have the stress of making ends meet, that stress of paying your rent, the stress of providing, except for I found, and I think it's different strokes, different folks, but I found that I was much more comfortable with that stress being on me than opposed to it being on, well, how many hours am I going to be scheduled at this job? Or are they going to give me the days off I asked for? Or am I going to have to work this? Like when it was in someone else's hands, I couldn't handle that stress. But when it was like, okay, at the end of the month, I need this $550. So if I go to this coffee house and we got a hand around this bucket and it comes back short, I might have to sell some more jokes and hand it back out again. But I'm more comfortable with that than putting it in somebody else's hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if somebody else will hand it to you, you might not jump off a cliff to go get it.
Yeah.
And that's a line that at some point you need to, at some point you do just need to take the leap.
Yeah. And usually if someone else is handing it to you, they've taken some off the top.
It's true too, isn't it? That's true too.
They skimmed it a bit. Chris, truly, like, not just for podcast sakes, but like, man, I like, I've just always enjoyed you from afar. I've always enjoyed Likewise. Your comedy and just you as a person. Anytime that we spend around each other, I just enjoy your spirit. I enjoy just the energy that you give off. And so it's been a real pleasure just to get to know you a little bit better. I wish you and your family the utmost success in whatever form that means for you. So I hope that in some small way I'm helpful to get, you know, anybody to come look at your special, because I just think you're a great mind. And not only that, so many people are funny. There's a lot of very, very funny people, but you're the fan base you have, the ability that you have, and the open heart and the empathy that you have shown to go after and protect and to support people who might be depressed, people dealing with different mental illness, people dealing with drug issues, people dealing with the forgotten people. You have made a living after looking after them. And I want to make sure that I tell you that I noticed that, and that it does not go unnoticed, and that it's a beautiful thing beyond comedy, that when you can help people in that way. And I'm sure you've in to not put it, I mean, I'll just put the, I'm sure you've saved your fair share of lives, and that's something you should be proud of.
I am very proud of it, and hearing that from someone I respect means the world. And I have so many similar feelings towards you. And I also know there was one night where I was headlining a show in Philadelphia and you were headlining the same night, and I was really sad because I knew I was going to sell less tickets that night. And I hope that never happens again, only because if we're in the same city, I want to be hanging out with you and catching up for real next time.
I love it. Hope we can go to a wrestling show or something as well.
Or brunch. Comedians do that, apparently.
Yeah. Yes, they do. Maybe we got to get an Emmy to do it, but.
All right. You're the best, man.
You too. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for coming. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.